Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. My name's Dolta Doherty, and in this podcast series, I will be speaking to investors, advisors, entrepreneurs, and recruiters who are based all over the world, and we will be discussing how to set up, scale, and operate a world-class recruitment company. Today, you're in for a treat. I'm speaking to John Gohan. He is the CEO and founder of Finlay James. They're an IT sales and technology recruitment firm that focus on the SaaS, fintech, ad tech space in Europe, in the UK, and now in the USA. We had a great chat about his plans for expansion in the USA, how he's got great value from being part of other networks within the recruitment industry, like James Osborne's network, which has been mentioned a couple of times on here, the recruitment network, how he's learned a lot from being part of the APSCO network as well, and how he himself has a mentor who helps him and some of the leaders within his business make sure that they are all on track and achieving the personal and professional goals that make us all happy. So he's got an interesting plan for attacking the US market with already a hub up and running in San Francisco, which, you know, I think by all accounts is the greatest recruitment market the world has ever seen. But it doesn't come cheap. It's an expensive place to live, and it's an expensive place to find staff. So I think he's also focused on maybe spreading out their footprint to other locations in the USA. And one of the interesting ways that he's planning to do this is by putting some of his best people in WeWork stations in Chicago, in Texas, and setting up another hub in New York. And I think that's a really clever way of mitigating your risk and getting close to your candidates and clients. So great guy, great story, great business. Hope you all enjoy. John Gohan, how are you?
I'm good.
Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast.
Hello there.
Where are you based today? You're not in lovely San Francisco, are you?
No, I'm actually in the wonderful Didsbury. I'm just looking out over cold feet, actually.
Very good. So here is what we normally do, John. We usually start this by asking you how you got into recruitment. I'm guessing it was a little while ago.
You've guessed well. So yeah, it was back 24 years ago now. So I had a, you know, probably a similar start to most people in recruitment, and I fell into it like most of us. And I didn't get involved until I was 25. So I had, you know, left college at 18, got a job in a bank, didn't like that. I then worked with my father at Standard Oil Refinery for 3 years, digging holes and pulling cables. And I didn't like that much either. So then I went to uni as a bit of a mature student at 21. So yeah, didn't get involved until I was 25, and joined a company at that time in Sale, in the northwest of England, who were a market leader in the IT sales space. And, you know, didn't really know what I wanted to do. But I think at the time, my girlfriend's father spotted an advert in the Manchester Evening News. It mentioned about 8 or 9 kind of pretty emotive words to describe what they were looking for. And I think he suggested that I seem to have all of those. So
he must have been worried about you, hey?
I think very much so. Very
this
much
guy's
so.
Drifting. He's taking my daughter with him.
That's it. So, yeah, I think 2 days before Christmas, I end up kind of getting offered an interview. I decided that these guys were very kind of pushy and a bit aggressive and said no to the second. And then I think I went out on a Thursday night, woke up to my mum saying that on the Friday morning, you know, there's a couple of guys on the phone. They really, really want you to come for this second interview. So, you know, I dived in the car, kind of headed off, and You know, the next thing I had a job, and you know, I was starting in the January. So yeah, fell into it really. Like,
and you made
the rest
enough
of
money
us.
To retire after 2 years, right?
Very much no. So the first year, I kind of found it quite tough. You know, it was my first sales role, my first kind of role out of uni, and you know, I recognized pretty quickly that, you know, if you had to work very hard and you had to work long hours. And, you know, I think the first thing I learned was, you know, getting people to like you, trust you and believe you within about 2 seconds on a telephone call. You know, that's, if you've got that knack, you can do recruitment. If you haven't, you'll never be
able
to do it.
That's an interesting take on it. Do you think you can learn that, or do you think that's maybe something that you have?
I think it can be taught. But I think the individual, you need the raw material. So you need somebody who is willing to learn, who's willing to make mistakes, who's willing to throw themselves into it. So, you know, what I say to my new guys now when they start is, if you want to be really, really quiet and you don't want anybody to hear you and you don't want to make any mistakes, you're going to really struggle. You know, you've got to be kind of, I guess, loud and proud and throw yourself into it. And if so, if you are making mistakes, we can help you. Mm. We can correct them, and we can move forward. But you've got to kind of really open yourself up to the experience of the people around you, which, you know, I did very much so in those first couple of years.
And coming in at 25, I came in at 27, and I remember sitting in a room full of 22-year-olds, and I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder about it. I kind of thought, they're not taking into account anything I've done before. I'm the same as all these kids here. And I really dug in to prove that I was going to be better. And I hadn't just drifted and wasted my time before recruitment. Did you have bit of that about you as well?
I think I was a little bit different in that. It was slightly bizarre, but if you've been out there, and, you know, there'll be other recruiters who've done similar things. If you've been out there in the, you know, the cold winters, kind of down, you know, 6 foot down a hole or, you know, above a hole pulling cables, and then suddenly you're in a nice warm office, and you've got a telephone, and all you have to do is ring people up, that's kind of, that's fine. And I was kind of pretty cool with that and pretty happy with that.
I came off 3 months picking beans on a farm in Australia. So
the kind of thing, you know, if you've done one of those tough, hard-ass jobs, you know, it's a nice, warm, cozy office with a cup of coffee and a phone isn't so bad.
What was Did it click for you pretty quick, or did it take you a while to get good at it?
I was pretty good pretty quickly. However, what happened was, you know, my first gig with a company called Howard Jackson was it wasn't in tech, it wasn't in IT. It was more kind of engineering. So it was people selling pumps and valves and all these kind of weird and wonderful things. And it wasn't a great market, but my boss left, an opportunity opened itself up for me to go into the IT space. And although I was, and still I'm, a bit of a technophobe, I loved the people, I loved the energy, and I loved, you know, the fast moving market that was even IT at that time. So and well, obviously developed into tech, and, you know, what is, you know, the fastest growing area now in recruitment, in my opinion. So I think an opportunity developed itself, and I was in the right place at the right time to go into that market. And as soon as I got into that market, I seemed to have probably a little bit more drive and a little bit more energy and a little bit more hustle than other people who had been doing that job for a number of years. So, you know, people who had been setting up 4 or 5 interviews a week, you know, I was suddenly setting up 10s and 12s, and I wasn't actually finding it that hard because, you know, I had the drive, I had the energy, and, you know, I wanted to be successful. I wanted to make money, and I could see with a good commission scheme, I could make some cash pretty quickly.
So you stayed for 7 years, and you kind of worked through the ranks. What could have that company have done to hold on to you?
That company, I mean, fair play. I did probably 4 years in, I looked to kind of move on, and I resigned, and I ended up kind of taking the counter offer and stayed for another number of years. And you know, what was interesting at the time is, you know, I had done 2 years new logo, you know, finding the clients. I had done 3 years doing the consultancy and filling the jobs, and then, you know, 2 or 3 years doing a bit of both. And I think what happened was we were the market leaders at the time. We were doing well. They were making good money. I was making good money. But I think we hadn't really grown that much. So I think there was probably more pressure on a smaller group of people than maybe there needed to be. So I think, you know, even when I left, they were maybe a 30-man business, and they could have been 60, 80, 100 because they owned the market, you know, for a period of time. So I think there was more pressure put on a smaller group of people who were very successful and did well. But I think I got to a stage where I was confident in my ability with people. And I thought I could develop something and get people to like me, trust me, believe me, and come with me on that journey. And that was what I suppose led me to have the confidence to move on after 7 years.
You mentioned a small group of people that were heavily relied upon in that business. So you already had a basis of people identified that would come with you.
No, not at all, Dalton. I mean, what I had was when I left, it was you know, I was looking to kind of do it on my own. And I had
what age were you? What was your family situation at the time?
I was 32. I was married with two-year-olds.
All right.
So yes, scary times. So I was obviously very confident in my own ability to kind of make the moves.
Do you look back now and think that was a brave
what
move?
What was interesting? Yeah. I think it was, and I think what you need at the time is that, you know, the support of your partner or your wife. So if Sarah at the time would have said, look, you know, you're earning good money, we've got two children, you know, we've got a mortgage to pay, you just need to kind of keep bringing home the bacon, then, you know, I would have looked to do that. But Sarah was very confident in kind of myself and what I could potentially do. Yes, it was a risk, but it was a risk that we felt as a family that, you know, we wanted to take and we wanted to embrace.
Was Sarah in recruitment at that stage, or did that come later?
No, much, much, much later. So Sarah, I think her background at the time was, I think, you know, she was a stay-at-home mum for a number of years with the children. Obviously, we had twins. And then went into marketing and actually only got involved with Finlay James 5 years ago. So she's still a bit of a recruitment novice, which she would admit. But what she does get is people, which is
she gets marketing too, because your marketing's improved dramatically in the last 5 years.
Yes, but we've got, you know, I can't put that down to Sarah in that, you know, we do have, you know, some amazing people within the marketing area of the business. So you know, her background had been, you know, she worked for Marketing Manchester for a while, so she you know, her job was, you know, getting people to visit and come to Manchester, which was a pretty kind of fun gig. But you know, there's loads of areas that Sarah's had involvement in the business, and marketing is just one of them, but we do have, you know, some great people within that space.
So
as well.
you in those early days, your vision for the business, were you going to take over the world? Were you going to be the next Michael Page?
Most definitely not. When things started, there was basically three of us in a two-man office in a Regis building in Didsbury.
Glamorous.
And yeah, very, very glamorous. And you know, the business plan was very much back of a fag packet. You know, we didn't really have targets. We didn't have budgets. We didn't really have a plan. We were just gonna three guys who were in an office, trying to get job specs, trying to get some candidates, trying to set up some interviews and to see where it took us. And I remember in the early days seeing a 6-person office in Regis and thinking, imagine if one day we could be sat in there, how amazing would that not be? And so, you know, the success we've had is, you know, all a bit of a surprise, because it wasn't, you know, we didn't have an end game. We didn't have, you know, this target to be, you know, an amazing tech sales recruitment company globally. It was, you know, let's make some money and let's kind of enjoy, let's have a bit of fun was probably the remit from day one.
How many years did it take to kind of get your formula down that when you brought somebody into the business, if they did X, Y, and Z, you could predict that they'd be successful, and you kind of almost had enough of a runway to get somebody up and running and then add extra headcount beyond that? Did that take a while to get that piece right?
I would say 2 to 3 years. So I think in the early days, and there'll be a lot of recruitment companies out there who are at that, you know, 6 months to kind of 5 year stage where, you know, I call it snakes and ladders, where, you know, you climb a ladder and you think you're on top of the world, and then suddenly, you know, you fall down a snake and you're kind of back to where you started. And then you might go up two ladders and you're down three snakes. So what you find is when you're very, very small, bringing on talent and bringing on people, when you have to bill and manage a business and do all the other stuff associated with running a business, is really, really difficult. And I think if you don't have the right culture and you don't have the right values and you don't have the right behaviors, that is really, really tricky. So I think what we did have was we had a positivity about the business, and we very early on we took people on with no recruitment experience, and we looked to kind of train them and develop them and nurture them and look after them. So our expectations on people at the start were pretty limited, because it was on us to help them kind of get going in the same way, you know, it had happened for me 8 years previous. So I think 2 to 4 years, I'd say, really.
And when you're putting together the type of recruitment firm that you want to be, when you're starting to get to that point where you have some of those processes in place, you've only worked for one company. Did you take a lot of stuff from that company, or did you get an advisor on board to help you structure it?
No, we in many respects we kind of had absolutely nothing in that. We a bit of a strange story in that when we first started, there was three of us, and we did have you know, some VC backing, so we had another chap involved. But we quickly realized that if we did well, we were going to have like a small percentage of something. If we did badly, you know, we were going to be out on our ear. So the dynamic didn't work. So we managed to get out of that relationship within like 12 months. So this chap was kind of bought out very, very early on. And then, you know, so from a year in, you know, going back 14 years ago, he didn't have anything to do with the business. So I think what we found was that, you know, we didn't have external advisors. We didn't have a plan. We didn't have help. You know, we didn't go to the bank and get any cash. So we didn't really have any projections. So we were all doing it with our, yeah, you know, finger in the air.
By the seat of your pants, really.
You know, yeah. Very much so. And I think, you know, the stuff that I've learned over the last 15 years, you know, I'm thinking if I would have had access to, you know, the people I have access to now 15 years ago, things would have been very, very different. And things could have, you know, happened a lot quicker for us, really. So I think my advice for anybody out there is get as much help, advice, resource, assistance as you possibly can, because there's actually a lot of free stuff out there, and there's loads of people out there who will help you and, you know, in some respects do it just to kind of, you know, do your favor. And, you know, very, very often you don't need to pay.
Can you do a bit of name dropping for me, just in terms of like, or just kind of go into what you mean by that, in terms of there's lots of people? Do you mean like, I see you're part of James Osborne's group. There's that. Is there other things as well? You're probably a member of APSCO and.
Yeah, I think, you know, APSCO, you know, we got involved with APSCO going back maybe 5 or 6 years ago. But we you know, maybe for the first year, you know, we paid our subs, but didn't go in any place and didn't learn anything and didn't get anything out of it. And it was, I think when Sarah came on board, it was right. OK, look, you've got access to this amazing kind of network. You know, what are you doing about it? And then suddenly I then kind of threw myself right in. And, you know, I have gone to probably, you know, 30, 40 meetings, you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, I've been at events, you know, I've presented, you know, I've got really, really involved. So I've got the benefit of a network of other people in the same space as me. And it's the same with the recruitment network. You know, we got involved with James Osborne going back kind of 4 or 5 years ago. And we were then, I think, the first people to join up to the recruitment network. And, you know, I've been involved with that now for a number of years. I've got maybe 8 or 9 of my managers on his Trailblazer program, which they all love and get a lot
out of. What type of stuff does that teach them?
My thoughts. It teaches them a hell of a lot of stuff because most of my guys, you know, have been good recruiters, but they've never managed people. So teaching them how to manage their time, teaching them, you know, the right behaviors, not so much of a manager, but as a leader. So these guys learn, you know, the skills of developing talent, retaining talent, growing talent, looking after their own time. And that's probably the some of the stuff that they're learning the best. And I think meeting peers who are in different companies of different shapes and sizes, it's great for me because they often come back and say, look, you know, we're doing a lot of good stuff. And, you know, it gives them confidence that they're working for a good company that, you know, the founders and the owners want to invest in.
Has it been plain sailing throughout your career as a CEO?
Oh, yeah, it's an absolute breeze. No, it's, as I say, you know, the life of a recruiter combined with the life of a business owner is, as I say, a game of kind of snakes and ladders every day of the week. And, you know, my philosophy is I don't get too hung up about the lows. I don't get too excitable about the highs. And I just want to do the best stuff I can. And I want to be kind of loyal to my staff. You know, I want to be open. I want to be honest. I want to give everybody clear opportunities where they can grow and develop their career. And I just want to be fair and look after people.
Really. I think it's fair to say that you're a structured business, but you're not rigid. Is that right?
We're not rigid at all. I mean, we've come on this phone call this morning, you know, we've made a change and we've made a shift whereby, you know, there's people who've moved divisions, moved areas to allow them to kind of grow their career. So, you know, I had a conversation with our MD, James May, last night on the way home. And, he rang me up and said, I just needed to speak to somebody. I'm so excited about the new plan. Now, this plan was put in place kind of 36 hours ago. So we're ever evolving and ever changing and ever kind of tinkering with things. But we're always super confident in everything we do. We're not afraid to make a mistake and we're not afraid to kind of get things a little bit wrong if it was the right play at the right time. So with each and every individual, whether you've been in Finlay James 2 weeks or 15 years, we look at every person as like an ingredient that, you know, we want to, you know, keep kind of moving and keep kind of changing and keep adapting to get better and better and better. So I think the people we have working at Finlay James, they all have a growth mindset. And the people who don't have a growth mindset leave. So either, you know, it's not right for them or they're not right for us and they go. So, you know, within the 15 years, you know, we've had people come, we've had people go, but we seem to still keep getting better every day.
When you look at the way recruitment works now, without like pretending to know much about you and your business, it looks like your work rolls all around the world, that you've got a few, yeah, you've got a few hubs that people work out of, that you do a little bit of work from home and you're flexible with stuff. Was that always the case or did that develop over time?
Yeah, that developed over time. I mean, we probably for the first 8 years, we were just out and out UK.
Okay.
So I think certainly for the first 12 months, we were out and out Northwest. So if there was a role in London, you know, we wouldn't take the role on. And, you know, that evolved over time. So suddenly we grew from Manchester down to Birmingham, London. We then started to do some work in Europe. That would have been maybe 5 or 6 years ago. We then started to do work in the US. And I think what we found was whether we were taking on a role in Munich, Manchester, or Manhattan, you know, the process and the technique that we were utilizing, it didn't matter. You know, we were as efficient placing people, 5,000 miles away as we were, 3 miles down the road. So we realized that, we work and we live in a global economy. So we wanted to embrace that and grow and develop these other areas in Europe and then in the States.
It's interesting. I remember when I started out, and I remember in Robert Walters, they're very rigid in terms of the way that they work, and that meeting people piece and having to do that face-to-face is part of their USP, and they really put it on. And I remember thinking, I could be doing way more. And I stopped going out to meetings, and I just started doing that as an experiment. Before I knew it, I was launching my own business and doing my own thing.
It
looks like you guys got that quite early. Was it copying the likes of S3 and the way that they approached? Was that you looking for other, at other agencies in terms of what they're doing and being able to go, oh, let's cherry pick this? Or how did it come around that you were all of a sudden you just changed your structure to doing this?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, because I think at the time, we weren't members of APSCO, Recruitment Network didn't exist. And we were one of these companies, like many out there, where it was all about us and we didn't really look out of our window to see what other companies were doing. So we didn't look at S3 or we didn't look at any other kind of players in our space to see what they were doing. But we took a role, in Europe and filled it and thought, That wasn't so hard.
Fees were higher.
We then kind of after that, and then we got a bigger fee. We then took a role in kind of New York and filled it and thought that wasn't so bad either. And so we then looked to kind of embrace that. And I'll be honest, certainly with the US stuff, James and the Recruitment Network helped with that because they had seen other companies do it and have success with it and make some mistakes along the way. So we could navigate and maneuver our way through a little bit to kind of, try and do the good stuff and miss out on the bad stuff and get to where you needed to be. So, what we did was hive off some of the UK consultants to kind of hone in on Europe and hive off then some of the UK consultants to deal with the States and have some guys then attacking the States from a new logo perspective. And it gradually started to develop. Whereas now, I see the future for Finley James being kind of very much 40% probably US, 40% UK.
So, John, I wanted to jump into some of the things that have happened recently in your business. You've recently gone through a management buyout. You've set up international offices at the same time, and you've redirected things towards London. That's an awful lot of things to have done at one time. How did all of that come about?
Yeah, I think it started probably around the time of Brexit. A week after, the Brexit kind of vote took place, my business partner at the time, Mark, came to have a kind of chat with me, and he decided that he kind of wanted out. He had done his kind of, 12, 13 years, and, he wanted to kind of go off and do other stuff and felt that, his kind of part of the journey was over. So what was quite cool is he, talked about, a number he would need to go. And I kind of said yes. And it was all done within 4 or 5 weeks. So, he headed off with a chunk of cash. And I kind of brought Sarah then in as the my co-shareholder, I guess, and business partner. And, we set off to run as fast as we could, I guess, and Mark headed off to kind of do other projects and do other stuff. So it was done efficiently, it was done professionally, and it was done quickly, so there wasn't too much pain for the staff, so it was a change for them. They had got used to kind of both of us as owners and runners of the business, and so there was going to be a different dynamic, but there was also going to be different opportunities. So, I had to kind of put, I suppose, my arms and Sarah, you know, had to put her arms around the whole business and kind of tell everybody it was going to be okay. And thankfully it was.
Walk me through San Francisco. That's an unbelievable office to open up. Like, I mean, it's not cheap. It's a tough market to crack, but from what I've heard, yeah, people who do crack it, there's nothing like it. How have you found it?
It's an interesting one because having just come back a week ago, you know, the San Francisco office now kind of 15 months on is very, very different to the San Francisco office 15 months ago. So we, I suppose made a couple of errors and a couple of kind of hicks along the way. So you know, I'll take you through them, and you know, I'm a little bit embarrassing, but you know, these things happen. But what you find, and I know you've spent time out there, Dalton, you do business out there. When you go to San Francisco, things happen very quickly. So we went out in September 2017. To kind of look at the market, you know, meet up with some clients, meet up some candidates and potentially hire some folks. And within a couple of days of getting out there, we were talking about a plan to maybe start something in the spring of 2018. Now, guys in San Francisco and guys in Silicon Valley, they don't do kind of 6 months. They don't do 4 months. They don't do 3 months. It's kind of, well, if you're going to do it, how about tomorrow? And you kind of get, and you go with the flow, and suddenly we came back and we had hired 4 people and we were all kind of set to go November 1. And, you know, we got an office in WeWork and it was kind of like, let's get cracking. So I think we got a little bit carried away with ourselves and a little bit excited. And I think San Francisco and I think California does that. And the difficulty we had is we had 4 guys out in San Francisco, but nobody to manage them. So Nick Guy, who runs that operation, didn't physically get his visa to get out there until June. So, you know, it started off and it was tricky because we had, you know, brand new grads hitting the market with no recruitment experience, you know, no exposure to work. You know, they were straight out of college. So we tried our best to kind of, you know, get through it. So these guys came over to the UK and spent a couple of the weeks in the UK. I went over and spent the whole of January and most of February in San Francisco, which was a lot warmer than here, while you guys were suffering with the beast from the east. So that went well on phone calls to the wife. You know, we managed to kind of get through, but we burnt cash in, you know, November through to March and April, where, you know, the billings were coming through, but it was slow. And it was only really when Nick got out there in June that it really started to motor and the big deals were starting to drop and we were starting to make
every
some
deal
money.
Every deal is a big deal.
It is. And you know, that makes a big difference that when you get them, they're great. But, you know, the work to get them is still similar to what we would do in the UK and in Europe. So you still need to get, you know, a number of interviews and a number of seconds and a number of offers to get, you know, the deals on the board and you know, the invoices and you know, the POs out the door. So I think we probably put ourselves a little bit further behind by getting a bit giddy and a bit excited and going kind of straight out there with the guy, without the guy. So in hindsight, we would have waited and get Nick on board, landed in San Francisco, and then do the hiring. But the benefit is we've now got guys who joined at that time who are now billing well, who are a year into their journey. And, you know, if we would have waited, they wouldn't be there. So we probably took a bit of a hit, but, you know, we'll get, you know, the benefit of that, you know, in the future moving forward.
The makeup of the office, have you found it tricky hiring experienced Americans into the business, or have you focused exclusively on new entrants into the recruitment market with a sprinkle of people from your UK office?
Yeah, the makeup as we sit here now, we have Nick Guy kind of heading up the office. We then have Justine, a lady who worked for us in London for a couple of years, a Canadian girl who now physically works in that office. So she's an experienced kind of 360 biller. So we've got two people who've had experience and exposure to the UK. And then we've got five people who are all brand new to recruitment. And, I think what one of them is I'm not sure whether he's Scottish or Irish, but he spent the first kind of 13, 14 years over this side of the pond and has been out in the US since he was 14 or 15. So we've got five absolute rookies. And then obviously sprinkled with the two people who've had exposure to the UK.
Yeah, it sounds like that is the best way forward from speaking to different firms. It's very hard to culturally align an American search recruiter into a British contingency-based recruitment firm, or even, and I it's just a very different way of working. And when I look at the people who've really scaled, like Faden or GQR, the Frank Group, they've done it with American grads, and they've moved over experienced people from the UK, and a lot of them have struggled to move anybody from an experienced person in America. That must be a challenge to get to scale. What's your plans for America when you know that you've kind of got it, you know, a base of it working? Do you see the growth going aggressive? Because the market's, it's supposed to be once in a lifetime market in San Francisco right now.
Yeah, I think we, one of the reasons myself and Sarah were out there over the last couple of weeks was to kind of reevaluate and kind of look at the plan. And, the exciting thing is, it's all systems go for the US, and it's just how we do it. So what we're looking to do moving forward is the research I've done, we've seen companies look to scale, and the companies that have tried to do it out of one location, I think have got a challenge, because if you bring on recruiters and they do really well, they get snapped up by other companies who will pay $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more for them. So the good guys, you're going to lose. And the guys who are not going to make it, the grads who are not going to make it, you're going to kind of do your money in pretty quickly on. So it's very difficult to win by just scaling up in one location. So what we're looking to do is to develop an operation in New York from October. And we're also looking to take people on, whether they are people in America or take guys over from Manchester and London to Texas, Boston, Chicago, places like that. So we want to now cover the whole of the US in, smaller operations of 1, 2, 3-man operations cross country, because we don't want to get to a stage where we become a feeder club for companies who can just offer absolutely huge basics and are so huge that they don't need such a return in the next 12 months, 18 months.
Yeah, I see a lot of people setting up out of LA because the cost is lower and working the San Francisco market from there. That seems to be it. It's funny, when we probably get more tech recruiters wanting to move to LA than New York, and there's the competition is less. So it seems to be some of the reasons to set up in these locations, it's not so much the actual market within the city, it's how attractive it is for the best people to move to.
I think that's it. And, we need to look at, and the interesting thing is, we've got a few people now who've put their hat in the ring that they want to, do the American kind of journey and do maybe 2 or 3 years out there. So we're really, really excited about that. But I think the key thing is, we understand from having folk out there that, the cost of sale is that much higher than the UK. So whoever you send out there needs to be somebody you're confident that they're going to build more out there than they're going to build here, or there isn't any point in doing it. So that's what we're conscious of as well. But yeah, the cost of living in San Francisco and the cost of housing in San Francisco, New York, it is very, very difficult. And therefore, you need somebody who's going to embrace it. So somebody just out to improve their Instagram, don't bother sending them. You know, you want to send somebody out there who, if they go to New York, they're going to be running around New York, you know, pulling jobs and meeting candidates and doing business, and not just kind of taking pictures, you know. So I think
John,
would
you change the model from 360 at all to because obviously if you get somebody out there pulling jobs, could they then be filled by your UK hub?
Yeah, well, we're doing that now, and it's quite an interesting kind of topic, really, in that we feel that, you know, the US is potentially the future, but it's enabled and it's supported very much from the UK. So we've got a chap filling jobs here in Manchester who joined me in late September, who looks like come this Monday will be the fastest person to get promoted in the history of Finley James. The only people he's placed are Americans in New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. So he's just placing senior stuff in the US.
Yeah, from fintech Manchester. Focus, probably.
Correct. Fintech, and a little bit of security, you know, AI security, fintech, bit of martech, you know. That they're the kind of real growth spots we see at the moment.
You know, Hayes struggled for a long time in America to get a foothold, and they bought a company called Veritas for, I think it might have been a couple hundred million. And and now their model's kind of interesting. So they will have people pulling jobs. They have a remote hub in the center of America because it's cheaper to find people to do that. And then they'll have another remote hub again, like doing some of the legwork. So they've adopted the 180 model, as opposed to the 360. Are you completely focused on perm deals, or have you got a plan to attack the American contract market? I hear it's a tough one to crack.
Yeah, I think it's something down the road that we've considered and we've talked about, and you know we're interested in. However, we feel in the short term, you know, let's concentrate on what we're good at. And what we've got is a combination of, so whether it's in the UK, you know, Manchester, London, or San Francisco or New York, you know, from October, we've got a combination of 180 and 360. So, you know, we want to have, you know, the new logo guys who are just fantastic at pulling new opportunities. We want to have the people who are great at landing and expanding and developing accounts and developing relationships. And then we will always have probably the highest proportion of people who are 180 delivery from the UK and in San Francisco. So even in San Francisco, the five grad hires are all delivery at the moment. So, you know, we have enough bandwidth for other people in America and here in the UK to find the jobs, and those folk go and fill them for us. So we're going to have, like, I suppose, a combination of models, but the way I see it working in, let's say, Chicago or in Texas is to have, you know, pods of people who can,
in WeWork offices,
you know, find jobs. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. You know, put them in a nice environment, give them the tools, give them the opportunity, and, you know, offer them as much support. So I would imagine certainly next year I would probably be spending 3 or 4 months out in the US, in San Fran, New York, and, you know, these other locations, you know, helping and assisting and getting the focus.
I can imagine Austin would be the correct one from a financial perspective. If you were able to build through Austin, your taxes would be lower.
That's... Yeah, I mean, I'm myself and Sarah and Nick, we're out in Austin at the end of Feb for the big SIA conference. And, you know, we've heard some great stuff. But, you know, I spent a bit of time with my mentor yesterday, and he was asking me a few questions about did I realize how big Texas was? And I didn't. And what he said was, you know, you could probably put 3 or 4 people out in Texas and, you know, they still wouldn't see each other every day, you know. So I think it's the size of the UK or something like that. So, you know, everything's just that bit bigger over there. So, but yeah, that destination seems like a goer from October or January.
So it's really interesting time then, because of the WeWork evolution, you don't necessarily have to like put a massive amount of investment into getting a premises and all the rest. You can just test it out, get people in, and manage your finances that way.
Correct. Yeah, and that's been great. I mean, that's, to be fair, that's what helped us get going in London, you know, two and a half years ago. So it was on the back of you know, I went in. I don't know whether you've been to the, you know, the one in Moorgate, which I think is the biggest in the world. I think there's, you know, 3,000 folk who work out of that office. And I walked into WeWork Moorgate. Joy Division were playing. There was a buzz in the kind of downstairs areas, and it was, you know, I think I was ready to sign within about 4 minutes as the song finished. So I kind of thought, this is where I want to be. And you know, we scaled that office up from, you know, one guy to, you know, 14 in 18 months. So I love the model. And you know, I think looking at San Francisco and London, I think we've probably been in 8 different offices as we've grown and developed. But, you know, if things change a little bit, there's that opportunity to scale down. So I love the WeWork model. I love the environment. And I know it's not for everybody, and certain people hate it and find it too relaxed. But my philosophy is people who are relaxed, people who are having fun, tend to do some of the better work than the people who are not.
Yeah, and when you're trying to attract people from the Michael Pages.
Correct.
And the Walters and stuff, and they're in a big call center with their suits on, wondering why they have to wear a tie.
Yeah,
and then they see some of the marketing that you're doing about being in a WeWork and have it like.
Yeah,
I know from being in those environments, and this type of stuff wasn't available when I was when I was in that stage of my career, but if it was now, I would be like, you know what, here, keep your tie.
Yeah. Cut your tie off at the door and kind of away you go.
Just wanted to ask you about, you mentioned you have a mentor. I thought that was interesting, seeing as, you know, you're so far into your journey, you're so successful already, but you have somebody that offers you your guidance. How did that come about, and what does that relationship look like?
It's not your wife,
is it?
I think it was... It's not. No. She'd like to think so, I think. we were contacted by a guy about 12 months ago, and it's something I had thought about over the years and just didn't make it happen. And I think in some respects, Sarah gave me like the nudge to kind of, right, you need to do this. And we've now got a situation where, you know, James, our MD, has got a mentor. Gareth, one of our regional guys, has got a mentor. And my thoughts are, the journey I'm on now, I suppose since the management buyout, is probably different to the journey I was on for the first 12 or 13 years, in that I think we feel now we can do something truly special and truly amazing. And you know, if we want to be the best tech sales recruitment company in the world, I need to be sitting down with guys who've taken businesses to the US, who've gone through the problems, the issues, and have got the kind of the scars to make sure I don't make too many mistakes along the way. And, you know, yes, we'll make mistakes, and that's kind of reasonable and that's fine. But, you know, talking to guys who are much more successful than me, who've done, you know, amazing stuff and worked with amazing people, you know, I'm always interested in learning and developing. And if I take 2 or 3 bits of information from that meeting that I can take back to base and kind of work on, then that's very valuable. And these guys, you know, they do it for nothing. So, you know, I would like to think that, you know, I'll be good enough to be able to help people on a similar journey, you know, 5-10 years down the line. So I think it's being grounded and being, you know, honest and humble that you don't know everything. And, you know, there's guys out there who know more than you.
All right, John. Thank you so much for that. I really enjoyed hearing about your journey and getting you on here. And it sounds like you're up to great things, and I wish you the best for the future.
Okay, thank you. You know,
A massive thank you to John for coming on the podcast. I enjoyed the story and it was good to get to know John, and I appreciate his humility. You know, he's a successful man, and yet he's not above going out there and asking for help and getting a mentor himself, which I thought was really interesting. And I thought it was interesting that he put it into practice for some of the other leaders in his recruitment firm. Really exciting times with San Francisco. I have to admit, this is one of the businesses I look at and I think, oh man, you've got it right. You know, you're in a good space. You're opening up in great locations. You're taking advantage of work and jobs remotely from the UK and the great market that's in Germany and in Europe. You're also working jobs in the US from the UK. You're going to put people in different hubs around America. You're going to trust them to be able to do the work and all the rest because they've earned it in the UK. And in case this sounds like just one big job ad, we don't work with Finlay James at the moment. So, I'm just really impressed by the business. Didn't know much about them before this. Just saw the branding and really appreciate John's time. And I wish them the best for the future. I feel like he's on to something. And we'll be back tomorrow with another amazing guest. So please, if you're enjoying the podcast, please do send this to another recruiter. And if you know anybody who's been on the podcast, reach out, let me know what you thought about it. Reach out to them, tell them what you thought about it. Everybody appreciates a bit of feedback, and I certainly do. So we will be back tomorrow with somebody else. So thank you again, everybody, for listening. Take care and happy hunting.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.